Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 273.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast.
Learn jazz piano without all the guesswork.
Now, your host, Brendan Lowe.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, where we have one mission, that is to help you achieve jazz piano freedom so that you can express your true inner soul and emotions instead of having to copy what others have shown you. Now, we do this by providing structured and organized jazz piano education on specific jazz piano tools that you can then take and use over any tune so that you have complete jazz piano freedom. All right, welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 273. My name is Brendan Lowe, creator and founder of Jazz Piano School. So thank you so much. I apologize, we had a little lag in the podcast episodes and the release of our content, and that's because I got very swamped with the launch and beginning of my brand new accelerator program, which is going fantastic, but that really threw me for a loop because I'm essentially handling and managing the organization of 17 students, Sterling and Trent, the instruction, the videos, me giving tutorials and feedback and lessons, essentially the group lessons. It was a lot of fun though, right? I couldn't possibly focus on all those things at once. So now I'm in a groove, everything's kind of rolling, and we are good. We're back to creating the content. So that group is amazing, by the way. Before we get into this lesson, I mean, really, really fun stuff. And I don't know if you guys saw one of the emails I put out there yesterday, but I really understand that accountability for practicing combined with specific educational components, like bite-sized components, like 1 to 2 small goals that are going to propel you forward, are the key to success. They're the key to learning jazz piano. Okay, now it's not just any education, because it really, there's so much education in jazz, right? There's so much education in jazz. So when we try and teach ourselves, we go into YouTube and things like that. A lot of times we spend so much time on really small, nuanced things. Right? Nuanced things that really don't move the needle. They don't help us that progress that much, but they sound pretty cool, right? So this, again, I love giving analogies. This would be like practicing, if you're a golfer, it'd be like practicing your super high flop shot, like over a 30-foot tree, right? Or if you're learning how to drive, this would be like learning how to do a backwards, like 180 in the car. Like, these things are impressive and cool, but they're not the fundamentals. They're not what's going to propel you forward in your learning success. And so many times, like, this is the problem. This is what I got. This is what a lot of students are getting. And in this day and age, you know, with the internet, obviously, we have access to so much information. And as a student, you're not the teacher. You don't really know what you need to learn. You can't self-assess yourself. You don't know what's right for you in the moment. So what we do is we just end up going onto the internet and kind of just like having fun and just spending time on a bunch of kind of useless stuff that really doesn't push us or get us anywhere in the right direction, because it's not what we need. It's just the stuff that looks cool to us, right? So there's a whole bunch of problems that happen in the learning, the jazz piano education path. And, you know, it's too bad, because this is exactly why I created Jazz Piano School. But anyway, with the program, I'm able to work with these students and give them exactly what they need for where they're at, right? They're filming videos for me. They're working with a private instructor. They're working with me. I get to record tutorials for each and every student and demonstrate exactly what they need to know, right? And these students are making fantastic progress, and I have proof. Everyone has been recording videos from the beginning of the class, and it's just incredible to see the amount of progress that they're making, and it's just fantastic. And I think what I'll do is, at the end of the program, I'm gonna do some interviews with some students and kind of talk about their playing and talk about how they've improved and what was so helpful. That way, you all can take a look at those and, you know, hopefully maybe sign up in the future, right? I do want to do a lot of different types of programs. And in January, starting next year, I'm going to be running smaller programs at a much smaller cost, right? This was a huge program, lots of events, teachers, private lessons, getting to work with me, guest masterclass artists coming in, Q&As, office hours, open mic nights, right? Just a huge program. This is essentially like quadruple a college class that you would go to. You know, with a college class, you usually have one class a week. This is like 3 to 4 events a week, and then plus homework assignments and stuff like that. But clearly it's working, so that's a good thing. But in January, I'm going to be doing smaller bootcamp classes on specific topics like improv, voicings, solo piano, these major, major components and topics and categories that everyone needs in jazz piano, everyone needs to work on. It'll be open to anyone, and I'm not sure how many people I'll cap it at, but it'll be, again, much cheaper, like $97 to $197 for about 2-3 weeks, I think, something around that, where we really dive in to these specific topics. I get to demonstrate work, the whole kit and boodle, right? I got to use that more, kit and boodle. It's a good saying. Anyway, so I'm also working on the improv course. That was obviously, this has been delayed a little bit because of the accelerator program, and that's coming along. Another big change I have coming up, which will probably take place in January, is that due to the accountability and the way that I see students progressing, I'm really thinking about changing Jazz Piano School to help students more, to help members more, to help any person that wants to come to Jazz Piano School more. Right now, essentially, the membership kind of allows you to just sign up and you kind of just do your own thing. And for me, that doesn't work anymore, because the accelerator program has really changed my opinion. It's changed my perspective. It's been fulfilling for me to work with people, and I want more of a finger on the pulse. So what I'm going to be doing is not to get into too much detail, but I'm going to be separating the self-study education, meaning all the courses, all the textbooks, the whole main course curriculum, success path, right, that's being used in schools and homes and colleges and things like that, high schools, from the membership portion, which will be give you access to myself and my team for accountability purposes, meaning lessons, practice sections, tools, all sorts of small accountable things that will help you practice, hold you accountable to practice, tell you exactly what to practice, and then you can show up again and get your next step, right? So I'm going to be separating, because some people want that. Some people, that's all they need. They don't want more education. They just want a coach. You know, I've been in certain situations a lot in business and life where I don't need any more information. Like, I have a lot of information, but I just feel lost. Like, I need someone to look at where I'm at, tell me where I'm at, and help guide me with the information that I have and show me how to put it together more. Like, I need a mentor, right? And with the self-study stuff, if you join Jazz Piano School, it's difficult to get that, because a lot of people, even including myself, it's hard to discipline ourselves. Even as we are moving through the education, we're like, am I doing it right? Is this working, right? So I'm going to be separating them. Obviously, you'll be able to do both of them together, but that's just a little hint into the future of what's going to happen. All the education is going to be much more accessible, actually, to own for life, which is a really cool thing that I want to do, so that you can kind of own a lot of different things for life, get lifetime access to them, and have all that education for life. And then obviously the membership will be separate, with trainings and live lessons and practice sessions with me and the team and everything like that. So anyway, long-winded answer. I haven't been on the podcast for a couple weeks now, so I did want to talk a little bit about that. But Sterling has an amazing episode for you today, and it's a really, really cool topic, talking about how do you know exactly what scale to play over changes. And this is going to be useful for so many people out there, so I hope you enjoy. Okay, here we go.
Hey, everybody. In today's podcast, we're going to be talking about chord scale relationships. A question I often get asked is, how do I know what scales or what notes to play over chords? If I'm playing a standard, you know, and I see a chord like D minor 7, how do I know what chord to play? And, you know, it's tempting to want to gravitate towards playing licks, like top, you know, 2-5-1 licks to play in the key of C major. Like, it can be good to learn those to get some notes under your fingers, but how do we determine which notes fit in the key of C major, or for that matter, a more distantly related key like A flat major, or, you know, God forbid, like G flat major? You know, a lot of flats or sharps happening. So today I'm going to show you how you can figure out what notes to play over any given chord and give you some ideas of how you can improvise using those notes and combinations like scales and arpeggios over really any standard that you need. So first I'm going to start by showing you a diagram, and this may be familiar, but we're going to review it. This is a C major scale harmonized in sevenths, major seventh chords. So we're starting with C major 7, D minor 7, E minor 7, F major 7, G 7, A minor 7, B minor 7 with a flat 5, and then we're back to C. So, how do we come up with each of these chords? Well, in the key of C, we know we've got all white notes. And if we went up a third at a time, you know, two notes at a time in this scale, we'd have a four-part chord built in thirds, which we call diatonic to C major. Diatonic meaning notes that are within the key. If we do the same thing starting from D, we've got D, F natural, A natural, and C. And E, E minor 7, F, F major 7, G dominant 7, A minor 7, and then we've got the B with a flat 5th, that's F natural. B minor 7 would usually be usually it has an S sharp in it, but in this case, we're going diatonic, so notes within the key of C, that's an F natural. And then back to C. So our whole scale harmonized. So why is that important? Well, this sort of acts as a framework for the entire system of Western tonality. We've got each of these chords serving a different function. The one chord, C major, is our home key, our root, and a chord like G7 is really important. It's our fifth, because our fifth goes down to 1, 5, 1. Right? Right? For example, another chord like A minor 7 is our relative minor, meaning it's the sixth scale degree. It's got the same notes in the scale as C, but we're starting on an A minor chord, which gives us a different sound and a different definition for that collection of notes. Other ways that we can use this theoretical template to our advantage is constructing a chord progression like a 3-6-2-5-1, for example. If we were to do a 2-5-1, our second chord in the scale would be D minor. That's our minor 2 chord. And our 5 chord, which we just covered, is G7, which goes down to our 1 chord, C major 7. Some people ask, why is the 2 chord in a 2-5-1 always minor? Well, this is the answer, because in the key of C, our diatonic collection of notes is going to include a minor 7th chord. Because remember when we built those notes from the scale? Right? Those are all notes within the key of C major. It's not going to be D major 7, because that's a whole different key. Those are our notes in the key of C. That's our 2-5-1 if we follow along with this template. So you can come up with all sorts of chord progressions within the key of C using any combination of these four-part chords harmonizing the C major scale. Major 1, minor 2, minor 3, major 4, dominant 5, minor 6, and then half diminished 7. These are the diatonic 7th chords within the key of C. Now, we haven't even covered any other keys. You know, if we did keys like A or E flat, you know, those would give us a lot of different colors, a lot of different 7th chords moving around on the keyboard, but we're just sticking with C for now, because we're going to look at a tune that uses a lot of chords like this. The tune we're looking at today is Fly Me to the Moon. And we can see a lot of these familiar chords within the key of C. We're actually starting on A minor, so rather than being in the key of C as our home key, we're starting in A, the relative minor, A minor 7. That's our minor 6th chord within the key of C. So if we look at these chords, we can kind of refer back to our diagram and say, where are these chords coming from? Well, the A minor 7 is the 6th chord. D minor is the 2 chord. G7 is the 5 chord. C major 7 is the 1 chord. And we've got a quick C7, which is a 5-1 in the key of F. But within our home key of C, F is the 4 chord. We've got our B half diminished, which is the 7 chord. And then an E7. Which is sort of like a 3 chord in the key of C, but with a raised third, a C sharp, which takes us back to A minor. So that can be really handy, this diagram, in terms of coming up with chord symbols or numbers to explain those chords. And what this tells us is that we can use any collection of these notes within the key of C major to improvise with. So for example, our first chord progression starts with A minor. We're going to play some C major over this. All right, and then here's our D minor 7. Again, more C. G7. All the notes in C major. Sometimes I use a passing tone for more of a bebop sound between the root and the seventh. And then there's our C major chord. Obviously, we're going to play C major over that. F major. We can play C over that as well, which some of you might be asking, well, it's F. Why wouldn't we play F major with a B flat? That's not wrong, you can play that, but since we're in the home key of C, F, if we look at our diagram again, F is the 4th chord in the key of C, so we can choose to play C major over this F. And we get this nice colorful B natural, which is like a sharp 11. If you want to think modally, this is like Lydian mode, sharp 11. And then B half diminished, we're going to play C again. And then we get to the E7. This is our first chord outside of the key of C. So what do we play here? Let's take another look at our lead sheet. Where is this E7 going? It's resolving to A minor. So whenever you have a chord resolving to a minor chord, you want to look at the home key of the minor chord. And this shouldn't be confused with the first chord in a 2-5-1. If it were A minor 7, D 7, G major 7, we'd want to use the home key of the 1 chord, the home key of G major 7. But since A minor is our 1 chord, that's our home key. So we're going to use the home key of A minor with a harmonic minor sound. So for example, over the E7, try A harmonic minor. Our next chord, we're going to do the same thing. We have an A7 chord going to D minor 7. So what's our home key? D minor 7. So this is D harmonic minor now. So for A7, we can play D harmonic minor. So then we have sort of a flat 9 sound, right? A7 with a flat 9. That B flat. Very colorful note. Okay, so we've covered so far all the keys diatonic to the key of C major, all the chords, D minor 7, G 7, C major 7, F major 7, B minor 7, flat 5. And then we had a chord outside of the key of C major, E 7, which went to A minor. So you can use harmonic minor scales to resolve into minor keys. So how do we practice this? Well, especially when you're working on jazz improvisation, the best thing to do is just to loop some 2-5-1s. So what I'll do is I'll take a 2-5-1 progression in the key of C, for example. And there are actually play-alongs that you can use for this. Sometimes what I'll do is hook up a play-along to play something like a 2-5-1 progression in the key of C. I use the iReal Pro a lot, which has 2-5-1 progressions that you can practice in 12 major keys and minor keys. So you can choose to either play the whole thing or just loop a couple of bars. So there's a couple of ways to do that. If you're using a mobile device, what you can do is actually select the bars that you want to loop and then go with that. So for now, I'm just going to put the drums on and play the chords in my left hand. But you can look for ways to accompany yourself with the play along. I'm going to play this at 120 beats per minute just for practice. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4. So now playing within the key of C. Those 2-5-1s in major keys, repeating until you go through all 12 keys. And what you want to also do is make sure that you're practicing your minor keys as well. So minor 2-5-1s, if I'm playing in the key of A minor, I'm going to use that A minor harmonic scale. So let's try a little bit of that. 1, 2, 3, 4. The idea. I'll do that with a play along and I'll loop the same key, like A minor, for a couple minutes, and then I'll switch to a different key. When you get comfortable with this exercise, you can try the whole playlist if you look at if you use the iReal Pro, like I have on my phone here. You can see the whole playlist goes through all 12 keys, which can be really challenging to do in a row, which is a great way to practice. And that way, whenever you see a home key like E flat or A flat or D flat, you're familiar with it already. So the next thing I'll do if I'm working on a standard and really, you know, if there are a couple of challenging spots, like I'm not exactly sure what notes to play there, what I'll do is I'll look at the whole chart and I'll go through and just say, what notes can I play in this chord, you know? So like we started with A minor, so we're gonna use C major, D minor, we're gonna still be using C major for a lot of the time. And I'll just go through and kind of find the notes first before I even play anything in tempo. So what I'm gonna do now is just call out these chords. You can follow along with your lead sheet at home. for Fly Me to the Moon, but I'm just going to call out these chords with some left-hand voicings and just play the notes in the scale, just kind of exploring the key for a second. So, starting with A minor. D minor. And this is all in the key of C, so I'm kind of just exploring around. G7. C major 7. F major 7. And here's our B half diminished chord. Remember, we can play C major over this. Bring in the harmonic minor for the E7. And then back to A minor. Here's A7. We're using D harmonic minor here, which resolves to D minor. G7. E minor 7. Now we're in the key of D. A7, maybe add some bebop notes. And then we resolve to D minor. G7. C major 7. So that takes us through the whole first half of Fly Me to the Moon. Just kind of exploring without the metronome. We're just exploring some of those notes within each of those keys. The next thing I'll do once I get comfortable with that, knowing all the notes, you know, that I can play within the chords and the scales, is get that in tempo. So I'll bring my play along back, 120 beats per minute, just getting some drums going so that I'm playing this in time now. Let's give it a try. 1, 2, 3, 4. You can see how you can combine some of those concepts of drawing notes from the scales and chords to improvise over a tune like Fly Me to the Moon and bring it together seamlessly so that you have one continuous solo. So I hope this was helpful, and looked forward to seeing you at the next podcast lesson.